Welcome to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We hope the following program will challenge you and encourage you in your faith journey.
The voice of the crowd is very loud today, isn't it? Telling us which lives have value, which lives do not. Pushing people aside, the disabled, the elderly, the prisoner, the unborn, the unwanted, the disruptive, the inconvenient.
Today on Focus on the Family, Emily Colson shares her perspective on the value of every life. And your host is Focus President Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
Well, welcome to the month of December when we share the top broadcasts of the year. This presentation from Emily Colson is near the top of the list, and we are delighted that so many of you were touched by what she had to say. One of our YouTube viewers, Jennifer, called her message a beautiful expression of the heart of a mother and the heart of Christ, and added, "May we all remember the value of everything created by God."
I love the way Jennifer put that.
Well, I do too, and that sums it up perfectly.
Well, let's go ahead and hear now from Emily Colson as she spoke at a staff chapel earlier this year in January on today's episode of Focus on the Family.
It's a joy to be here this morning and share some of my story with you. I have a beautiful son. His name is Max. He's 28 years old. He's awesome. And he has a diagnosis of autism. Nothing has been simple or easy in our lives, but God has made it beautiful. I've been a single mom with Max for most of those 28 years, which means I drink a lot of coffee. It also means that God has given me a beautiful perspective on life. Psalm 100 says, "Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his." I have to tell you something about Max, maybe my favorite thing about Max. Max loves church. Oh, that's such a great statement. It's huge because for years we couldn't figure out how to be in church. We didn't know how to do it, but only God could unfold his beauty in an impossible situation. Max loves church so much that he even loves other churches. He fell in love with this one church service that's played every single morning on television at 7 o'clock. Well, we've gone to visit this church several times. It's in Massachusetts. It's about 150 miles away. Every time we've gone, we have had beautiful blessings. So on this last visit, we invited some friends to come with us. We invited my friend Christine and her son Christopher. Christopher is a little bit younger than Max. He also has autism, and Christopher is blind. Well, we each drove 4 hours from our different homes and met up there. We were about 20 minutes early, and I said, "Oh, Christine, we just have to go in because Max needs to soak everything up and kind of get used to the environment, and he's just too excited to sit outside." So we went in, and sure enough, Max is just looking all over this church and so excited in anticipation of the worship that every now and then he's throwing his hands up in the air and he's yelling, "We're gonna sing God's praises!" Shouldn't we all come into church like that? Well, there was a woman on the other side of the church in a bright blue shirt. I saw her get up and walk towards us, and she leaned into my friend Christine. And she gave one of those head nods toward Max. And she said, "He doesn't belong. I can't think. I can't pray. Can't you just leave? He doesn't belong." I want to tell you that what happened in that church has nothing to do with any denomination. It has nothing to do with that church. It doesn't even have anything to do with that woman. It has everything to do with our common human condition. There's a story in Matthew that I just love, Matthew 20. Jesus is leaving the city of Jericho, and there's a crowd around him. And he hears two blind beggars cry out to him from the side of the road. And do you know what happens? Do you know what the crowd around Jesus does? My NIV Bible says, the crowd rebuked them and told them to be quiet. Now, embedded in that is, you don't have any value, right? Jesus doesn't have time for you, two disabled men on the side of the road. Jesus doesn't have time for you. You don't belong, right? And when the crowd tried to silence them, the two blind men cried out even louder to Jesus, knowing he is their only hope. And then, this moment that I love, Jesus stopped with the crowd around him and the cross before him. Jesus didn't listen to the voices of the crowd. Jesus listened to the two blind men crying out for him. Now, Jesus turned to those men and he said, "What do you want me to do for you?" They asked for their sight. Now, we know Jesus could have healed those men from a distance and gone on his mission because he had a lot to do, but he didn't. He got close. He walked up to those men. He got very close. He put his hands on their place of brokenness and brought them healing. Jesus didn't listen to the crowd. Jesus stepped in. The voice of the crowd is very loud today, isn't it? Telling us which lives have value, which lives do not. Pushing people aside, the disabled, the elderly, the prisoner, the unborn, the unwanted, the disruptive, the inconvenient. We see it with assisted suicide. We see it with abortion. We see it with selective abortion. In our country, our number of babies that we abort who are diagnosed with Down syndrome is upward of 67%. We know it's higher. We just don't have those numbers to track it. It takes little imagination for me to know who is next. When Max was diagnosed with autism, it was around 1 in 10,000, maybe 4 in 10,000. We just knew it was rare. Now the CDC reports that autism affects 1 in every 59 children, and a new federal study reports that it's more like 1 in 40 children. God calls us, his church, to step in, to defend life. But I want to ask you a hard question this morning. Will the church be able to defend life if the church is not yet able to sit beside that very same life for an hour in the pew on Sunday morning? Well, I want to take you back to that little church in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, this tiny little church where this woman in the bright blue shirt kept leaning into my friend, saying of Max, "He doesn't belong. Oh, I'm so thankful for a friend beside me." My friend Christine kept looking at this woman, and all she said was, "All are welcome. All are welcome." We had an advocate. We had somebody standing up for us, somebody saying, I see this person's value and he belongs. We stayed in that church, and I'm just going to tell you that I'm not sure they've ever seen worship quite like that, quite that joyful. Max was so excited, bouncing up and down, singing at the top of his lungs. He is so thrilled. The priest would say something, and because he's memorized everything, the priest would say, peace be with you, and Max would answer, and also with you! So excited. I don't know if we looked like church or a soccer match, but at one point, the priest, who was a very serious guy, just burst into this holy joy. He just burst into laughter. He couldn't contain it. When the service was over, I just put my arms around Max and hugged him, so overwhelmed by God's goodness, by God's beauty in every life. And as I was hugging him, I felt someone watching me, and I looked up, and it was the woman in the bright blue shirt, and she was smiling. 1 Corinthians 12:18-22 says, God has arranged the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. Those parts that seem weaker are indispensable. God calls us to him not because we are worthy, but because he is great. God places value in every life, and he calls us, his church, to affirm that value.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
I was shocked when she gave me the divorce papers.
I was so done. I had reached my breaking point.
I was desperate for a shred of hope, so I called the Hope Restored team at Focus on the Family. They listened to me, and they asked about what was happening in my marriage. They encouraged me and my wife to attend one of their marriage intensives for couples in crisis, and they prayed with us. They helped me believe that my marriage could be saved.
I agreed to go, but was very skeptical that anything could help us. But the whole environment was so safe and non-judgmental. I felt my heart start to open up as we worked with the counselors.
Both of us still have work to do in our marriage, but for the first time in a long time, we have hope again.
Focus on the Family's Hope Restored Marriage Intensive Program has helped thousands of couples who thought that their marriage was over. Find out which program is right for you at hoperestored.com.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
When Max was very young, I could take him to church quite easily. He was a wiggly guy. He was really loud. And then we hit those very tough years that we went through. We stopped going to church. We stopped going everywhere. You know, sometimes it seems like church is made for those with a spiritual gifting of being quiet and sitting still. We don't have really either of those giftings. Sometimes we're trying to make the church so perfect that we forget that the people who are coming in aren't. Max was baptized. He gave his life to Christ when he was 13. My dad had the privilege of baptizing his grandson. He was a Christian. I thought, we can't be out of church when my son is a Christian. So I thought, I'm going to take Max back to the one thing he always loved about church when he was young. He loved it to be over. So we went when church was over. I thought, we can do that. We can do that milling around, and it's the coffee hour. I thought, we can do that. Well, we got there, and Max started helping some of the guys stack chairs. And I didn't really know what they were doing, but when we were about to leave, one of those men came up to Max. He put his hand on his shoulder as if he were knighting my son. And he said, Max, we could use you on the grunt crew. That's the cleanup crew. Well, I didn't know what it was. Max didn't know what it was, but he stood so tall and straight, and he gasped, yes. See, somebody took 1 minute out of their life to say, Max, you're needed. You're valued. You're indispensable. That one invitation changed our lives. For 6 years, we came to what we called backwards church. We came when church was over. We were there for the worship music at the end, and Max was there to serve. Everybody got to know and love Max and his joy of service. I want you to know that now he comes. Now he comes and he serves on the Welcome Center. Now he comes and he serves in Kids Church and he helps out down there. He comes and he serves by vacuuming. He does have the spiritual gift of vacuuming. And Max is a greeter. Oh, I wish you could see people coming through the doors of our church. They're carrying their burdens, the burdens of the week, the worries they're carrying, and they meet his joy and they are undone. I watch the armor just drop right off and they are ready to worship. I think Max in front of our church says everything. I think it says all are welcome. Disability on the outside, disability, spiritual disability on the inside, come. Max has found this spot where he loves to worship every Sunday morning. He climbs up on the sound booth platform. It's about 5 steps up in the back of the church, this little plywood platform, and he's up there every Sunday morning, and he is leaping and dancing. He's 190 pounds, so he's airborne more than he's on the ground, so when he lands, you really, really, really know he lands. He sings at the top of his lungs. He was up there one morning, and he's leaping and dancing, and a friend was standing beside me, and I said, oh boy, I said, one day, Max is going to go right through that floor, dunk tank style. He's going to disappear. And my friend just smiled gently, and he said, no, he won't. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because months ago, some of the men in the church noticed exactly the same thing. Months ago, they got together and they reinforced the floor. Yeah. I so love this. Do you know what I love? Nobody told me. Nobody said, Emily, we really love having Max here, and he belongs, but he just doesn't belong here. Could you have him belong over there? Because that's what we do with people with disabilities. We want to welcome them in, but I'd like to welcome you in over there. People that make us uncomfortable, people who are a little bit different. They didn't do that. Nobody told me about the inconvenience, about how these guys had to get together and take their Saturday and come into the church just specifically to rebuild the sound booth platform where Max dances. Nobody told me about the inconvenience. They just held him up. That's what God calls us to do as the church, to hold each other up, to uphold life, to stand for what is good and right and true, to be like Jesus and step in. Our churches need to sound pro-life, and our churches need to look pro-life. There's a woman at our church named Kate. She came up to me one day and she said, Emily, I've been at this church for about a year. And she said, I came to this church because I heard how much this church loves Max. And she said she thought to herself, I think if that church can love Max, then I think that church can love me. Our pastor said about Max being in the church, we gave up perfect and we got something better. And that something better is that lived out faith that begins to ripple out into the community. And it's what people are hungry for. God has given me remarkable blessings in this journey with Max. And I will tell you that none of it has been easy. There are challenges that are beyond what I could begin to describe, and there are gifts and blessings and goodness, the goodness of God, beyond what I could describe. This is exactly where God calls us to step in, to rejoice with those who rejoice, to grieve with those who grieve, to step in to the joys and challenges with our families. If you know of a family living with disability, I want to tell you something that's kind of old school. Pick up the phone and call them. You will be amazed at how touched they will be. Ask if you can come and visit. Ask if you can do something with the family, something that they really love to do anyway, not out of their comfort zone, in their comfort zone, and join them there. A friend of mine, Kathy, who is raising a daughter with significant disabilities, said she loves when people say they are going to pray for her, but she said what she really desperately wants is someone to pray with her. Invite someone to church. Invite someone to stack chairs. You might just change a life. You might just change the church. Many look at disability and question the goodness of God. We have big questions around disability. We look at people to try to understand who God is, right? But we have that backwards. We have to look at God to understand who people are. And he is the author of all of life. He is the creator of the heavens and the earth. He is the great I am. So we come to him. We come to Jesus, our help and our hope, asking him to help us with our own blindness in our hearts and in our churches that keeps us from seeing the beauty and value in every life. And he shows us not to silence the cries of those who want access to him, even when those cries disrupt our plans and our church services, even our mission. Every life is precious, unrepeatable, irreplaceable, indispensable, one of a kind, and part of God's grand love story. Keep going, my friends. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep speaking up for life. Keep defending life. Keep upholding life. I am so very, very thankful for you. God bless you.
Emily Colson on today's episode of Focus on the Family. And Jim, we had to end there, but you asked our staff to join Emily in praying for families in the audience affected by autism, like my family. And that was a really moving experience. I want to thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome. I just felt the Lord nudge us in that direction, John. And that's what we need to do in the body of Christ, mm-hmm. hold each other up in prayer and in practical ways too, like Emily talked about. And as the church, we need to make sure that we welcome everyone into our houses of worship. Let's not shut out people like Max, who have such an exuberant love for the Lord. Let's be bold in asserting the value, literally, of every life. And I want to encourage you to support the pro-life movement in a tangible way. Consider joining us in Washington, D.C. for the March for Life, which is just over 7 weeks away now, on Friday, January 24th.
That is such an amazing event in our nation's capital, and the media just can't ignore such a huge crowd on the streets of Washington, D.C. We talked to someone who said it's bigger and younger every year. It's a great way to go out and be counted as a pro-life American.
That sure is. And if you can't come to Washington, make plans to join us for a multi-city pro-life celebration that we're calling Alive 2020. It'll occur on May 9th, the day before Mother's Day. And we'll have pro-life speakers, inspirational music, and a 4D ultrasound on the big screen so that everyone can clearly see a baby waiting to be born. A baby, not a clump of cells or massive tissue. Many of you heard about the Alive from New York event we hosted last May. It made a big impact, especially the 4D ultrasound with the echo of that baby's heartbeat reverberating through Times Square. I'll never forget it. Now, here's just one response that we received from a man in North Carolina. He said, "I have stayed on the sidelines on the abortion issue, but wow, your Alive from New York event really opened my eyes. Thank you for being a voice for the voiceless, the unborn baby that we saw and heard today."
That is amazing. And we have no idea how many people were impacted by that moment, that ultrasound and that heartbeat being heard. There were 20,000 people in Times Square. We had hundreds of thousands listening and watching online and through our radio partners. It was a big, big event.
And that's why I'm excited to extend the reach of the pro-life message by hosting these free events in Orange County, California, plus the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Chicago, Atlanta, and South Florida. Visit our website for more details. And let me encourage you to support us as we stand up for life. We need your partnership. We need to do this together. So please donate generously today. And because this is such a critical time for us, some faithful friends of this ministry have offered to double your donation dollar for dollar, making now an excellent time to give. For example, a gift of $50 will become $100, doubling the impact of your contribution. And when you make a donation of any amount, I'd like to send you our Best of 2019 CD set featuring the programs that received the largest response from you, the listeners, this year. It's a 12 CD set with 14 titles, so please give generously.
Donate and request your Best of 2019 CD set when you visit our website, focusonthefamily.com/broadcast, or you can do that by calling us. Our number is 800, the letter A and the word family, 800-232-6459. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for joining us for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ. You're listening to Focus on the Family's weekend broadcast. We'll take a quick break here and then return with another faith-building program for your family. Stay tuned.
Show me your face. Let me hear your voice. I don't want to have a conversation with you from three rooms away. Come in here. I want to see you. I want to hear you. I want to remove distractions.
Pastor Ted Cunningham has some really good advice to help all of us become better listeners on today's episode of Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Ted is one of our favorite speakers on the subject of marriage because he offers great nuts and bolts ideas along with a healthy dose of humor, and that's what you're going to hear today. Ted is the founding pastor of Woodland Hills Family Church in Branson, Missouri, and the author of several books on relationships, especially between husband and wife.
And you can find out more about Ted Cunningham and his book, Fun Loving You, at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. Here's Ted speaking at a recent gathering of the Focus on the Family staff.
So, a journey I've been on for about the last year and a half is to become a better listener. How many of you think you're awesome listeners? Would you raise your hand? This is a fun place to work, isn't it, Jim? How many of you think you just have a little bit of improvement, but you're not a terrible listener, but you could get better? Okay, it's the rest of us. So this is the journey I'm on, because about a year and a half ago, I asked my wife and son at lunch. I sat down, I said, scale of 1 to 10, and I was enthusiastic about it, scale of 1 to 10, how good of a listener am I? And my wife, this is over lunch, immediately said, 5. And I said, well, why don't we take the lunch time think about it a little bit. You don't need to give me an answer. Right? I don't need it right now. I said, Carson, he's my 13-year-old. I go, how am I doing listening? He said, about a 5. And I mean, they could see it all over me, like, this is not good. This is not, I was expecting more. My wife's nickname for me is Marriage Boy. I got to be doing better than a 5. And Amy could see this was really working me over. So she came into the rescue right away. She said, now, I will tell you, when we have your undivided attention, I'd give you an 8. So that's good. I know that's exactly what I need to do. Be focused, be in. I said, Carson, what do you think I should do? And without batting an eye, he goes, Dad, the next time I ask for money, listen. Not at all the point of that exercise. So I've been honing in on the listening skill, how to increase my marital satisfaction by becoming a better listener. And I take you to the Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 14. Where Solomon is speaking to the Shulamite woman. They're not yet married. They get married in the next chapter. But this is what he says. My dove. Let's stop right there. Guys, if you don't have a pet name for your wife, go with my dove. It works. And here's all you need to do to begin the conversation. Coo. I'm not kidding. Listen, I don't know if your wife ever tries to have a conversation with you from 3 rooms away. This is the most exhausting thing about trying to communicate in a home. I hear her from another room, and this is all I hear. And it goes on. I used to say, what? And she'd launch right back into, we want to do it, then we go, we get the laundry. You know what I do now when she's 3 rooms away and she starts a conversation that I can't understand? Coo. Coo. It's my dove call. It works. Look at my dove in the clefts of the rock and the hiding places on the mountainside. He's wanting to get to know her. It doesn't say my mountain lion. It doesn't say a snake. Solomon uses a gentle, tender dove. And she's back into the hiding places on the mountainside. And he wants to draw her out. How do you draw out a dove? You don't just go in there and start jabbing to try to get it. You're gentle. You're tender. You're kind. Ooh. Ooh. Show me your face. Let me hear your voice. I don't want to have a conversation with you from 3 rooms away. Come in here. I want to see you. I want to hear you. I want to remove distractions. I want to get rid of the children and the technology and everything. They're going to be out, and it's going to be you and I, eyeball to eyeball, having a conversation. And then when you do speak, I'm going to be the safe spouse. Your voice is sweet, and your face is lovely. Coo. Coo. I love this. I was just in Louisiana teaching them how to do the dove call. And one guy came up to me after the session. He goes, Pastor, you do that around here, you're going to get shot. But what Solomon is speaking about here, we read these 3 great word pictures in Proverbs. Proverbs 3:3 speaks of the heart as a tablet, that messages are written on the tablet of the heart. Proverbs 4:23 talks about the heart being a wellspring. Every word you speak and every action you take, it flows from your heart. And then, Proverbs 20, verse 5, the heart is like deep waters. And a person of understanding is able to draw them out. I love all of this imagery, from the dove to deep waters. I want to be a person of understanding, a person of insight in my marriage. So I just want to listen. But we're losing the listening skill in our culture today. I think we're getting worse at listening. But listening is the fast track to your spouse's heart, to the deep waters. We live in a day where we get our news from algorithms on social media and cable news networks that reinforce our biases, which means we're only wanting to listen to news we agree with. How's that working in your marriage and in your family? I'll listen to you when I agree with you. You remember when we used to watch the news to find out what was going on? Now we turn it on to figure out, what should I be mad about today? And it just gets us all spun up and all fired up. Healthy people, or the scripture, I'll start with this, Proverbs 18:2. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Healthy people are not threatened by the opinions of others. Now bring this back to marriage. A healthy husband is not threatened by the opinions of his wife. A healthy wife is not threatened by the opinions of her husband. Listening to you does not mean that I agree with you. And this is the big one. Disagreeing with you doesn't mean that I hate you. It just means I have a difference of opinion. You know what listening does? Listening screams, you matter to me. Listening screams, I want to get to know you. I want to find out what's in your heart. And I can't do that as a husband when I'm running my mouth. This may shock you, but I'm the talker in our family. And as Christmas approaches, I couldn't quite grasp this. Amy and I, we've always had very different opinions on how Christmas should be celebrated. Very different. My wife grew up in a home where there was garland over every door, a tree in every room. You can't start decorating until just the right cookie is being baked in the oven. And the Christmas, Bing Crosby is playing on the radio. And I never understood when we got married why I was so angry every December. Like, I just like, why by the time I pull the 46th box down out of the attic that says Christmas decor on it, I'm in no mood to celebrate the birth of my Lord and Savior. I'm ticked. You know why? It's all about the heart, the tablet of the heart. The message on Amy's heart is Christmas is celebrated long and with lots of money. I'm sorry, I have to do this in a place that screams I'm learning. But I never could figure out when our kids would come over with an ornament that they made the year before and be like, hey dad, I made this ornament last year, put it on the tree! Like, what? Where did that just come from? Well, it came from my heart. You know what my heart says? My heart says Christmas isn't that big of a deal. You know why? My family, we decorated for Christmas on a commercial break. My dad, while we're watching That's Incredible, would say, hey, we should probably decorate for Christmas. And he'd go over to the crawl space, take the pegboard off the crawl space, reach in, grab a 3-foot pre-decorated tree with a garbage bag over it, put it on the humidifier, and we'd take it off. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Year after year after year of that, the message on my heart was, Christmas just isn't that big of a deal. On Amy's heart, the message is, Christmas is big. You start planning it in the summer, and you launch it the morning after Halloween. This is why we moved to Branson, Missouri. We celebrate Christmas for 3 months in Branson. It's a big deal for her. But I don't have to change that in her. But now my wife's way better at listening. I give her an 8 or 9. Way better at listening than me. She's the one that listened to my heart to find out, why are you so angry with decorating for Christmas? Healthy people can decorate for Christmas without escalated arguments. I said, not where I grew up, no. But she would listen, try to figure out, and then we figured it out. The way our family decorated year after year after year wrote these messages on the tablet, the wellspring, the deep waters of our hearts. Listening and understanding your feelings doesn't mean I agree with your opinions. Amy and I still don't 100% align on things. She's the same way with birthdays. Birthdays are a big deal. The message on her heart, birth weeks are very important in the life. And I grew up with a mom and a dad who loved me, but birthdays, we didn't have big parties. My mom and dad would put a 10 or a 20 on the table and yell up the stairs, happy birthday, son. Years of that. How many of you grew up the same way? It was just similar. It's just put a message on your heart, and now you get married, you bring your family of origin, and she brings her family of origin, and we have differences of opinion. But the quality of our marriage and the level of marital satisfaction for us is when we listen to get into the heart, to the tablet, to the wellspring, to the deep waters, to find out what's going on. And when we do find out what's going on, we live with fascination, not trying to change each other, but we have these aha moments. Have you ever been at your in-law's house and they say or do something and you're like, that's why. Like you've been married for 10, 20 years and you could never figure out this one argument or what was going on, and then something is said or done and you're like, my husband watched that for 20 years. And it wrote a message on his heart. My wife heard you say that over and over and over and over again. It wrote a message on her heart. See, the fun of marriage is discovering those messages. And you can't discover them when your mouth is running and all God's people said. It's about listening. Listening to you, Amy, does not mean I need to solve your problem. It means I'm just getting to know you and that you matter to me. Here's a big one. I can listen to your opinions, Amy, without seeing it as an attack on mine. I'm just going to listen.
This Focus on the Family broadcast will continue in just a moment.
Find fun for your kids just a click away.
And now, Adventures in Odyssey.
The Adventures in Odyssey Club, where your 8 to 12-year-old can find trusted, faith-building entertainment in a safe online club. It features almost every episode ever, plus special monthly club-only episodes and content, and a Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine subscription. Sign up today. Just go to aioclub.org/radio.
Oh, hey, Mike. Got here as soon as I could. What's going on, man?
Hey, I just wanted to give you an update on my marriage.
Is it good news?
Yeah. Our marriage is going great right now. I couldn't be happier.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's like a solid 5 out of 10.
Having a marriage that's just okay isn't where couples really want to live. Give yourself and your spouse an all-inclusive weekend where you'll slow your pace and focus on each other. Get more details at focusonthefamily.com/getaway. That's focusonthefamily.com/getaway.
Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. Let's resume now with the balance of today's programming.
There's a lot of bad listening styles that I have. I came up with about 12 of them, and after sharing these for a couple of months now, people have brought me more, so the list has grown to 15. And these would represent 15 bad listeners. And I'm just going to give them to you in rapid fire. I'm about 5 of these 15. You may be several of them. You may be one of them, major. But I'm just going to run through them. The first bad listener is what I would call the nodder. If you've ever seen the nodder, it's the person that always, when you're trying to talk to them, they're going, It's the person who took a management course at work. And in that course, they were told, when someone is speaking, give them an emotional cue or a signal. Be responsive. And the person never quite learned how to bring balance to that. And so when you're trying to talk to them, all you get is, And you're like, yeah, I'm done with this conversation. This is too much. Nodders. You can nod to let them know you're, just bring it down a notch. That's all we're asking. The eye roller. The eye roller. The conversation hasn't even started yet, but just the mere mention of we're going into this conversation about money or about in-laws or about jobs. I'm an eye roller, and I don't think anything communicates contempt more than an eye roll. And it's not just, I don't want to listen to you talk about this. You got to go deeper than that. I don't want to listen to you. Right? That's what contempt is. Contempt goes past a person's opinion, right, to their soul, to their character, to who they are. The eye wanderer. This is the person that's looking for a better conversation. Person looking for something better to do. The bored. This is the person, the lights are on, but no one's home. They're not fully there and engaged. I'm the distracted listener. The distracted listener is distracted one of two ways, either by everything going on in their mind and all of their lists that are constantly running, or by their environment. I can be distracted by both. Noisy restaurants are not great places for me to try to engage in a deep conversation because I'm so distracted by everything going on. The watch glancer. This is the one that, I mean, nothing says rude more than looking at your watch while someone is sharing their heart with you. And whenever someone does that to me, I just tap on their watch and go, I'll be done in just a second. The watch glancer. The new one is the scroller. This is the person that in the middle of a conversation, they take their phone out and start scrolling. Oh, the next three. The one-upper. You've heard of the one-upper. It's like if you've been there, they've been there far more times than you have. It was a better trip. They've done it more, they've been there more, they love it more, and that you can never get one up with them. Or the one downer. We don't talk about this one a whole bunch. The one downer is the person, and I deal with this a lot with senior adults. You hear them talking about their illnesses, and they're trying to one down each other. And you'll hear, I'm from Branson, we minister to a lot of senior adults, but you'll hear a guy go, "Man, I'm not feeling well." "You're not feeling well today. You don't know what not feeling well is. I'll let me." And then they start discussing very inappropriate things with one another. It's like, we're not competing over your sicknesses here and your illness. But maybe you come home from work and you're married to a one downer and you're like, "I had a rough day." "You had a rough day. You have no idea what I put up with at work or what I put up with around here." The overvalidator. Oh, this is one. I actually got this from a friend recently. She said, "Ted, you need to add this to your list." They've been through several miscarriages as a couple. And she said over our last one, and these are, Amy and I walked through this with them, but they're heart-wrenching. And she said, "Ted, the number of people that stopped by to visit me and to share their story with me." So we read in Galatians, every man must carry his own load, but we're to carry each other's burdens. She said, "I finally had to tell someone who came in to validate what I was going through, but they didn't see what they were doing. They're just putting more and more on me." She said, "I finally put my hands up to this person and said, whoa, 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 whoa." I mean, this was like a day after they lost their child. She said, "Whoa, whoa, 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 please, 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 please don't. I'm already carrying such a load right now. I can't carry any of yours." The over-validator, the person who thinks they're helping, but they're not really. Let's just listen. As I shared this at a church in Houston a couple months ago, a lady said, "Ted, I didn't realize that it could be of any value, but we have dear friends who just lost a son to brittle bone disease. And when my husband called me and said, we need to go over and be with them, we walked in and the husband was in the family room and my husband stayed with him. And he told me that his wife was back in the bedroom on the bed there crying. And she said, Ted, all I knew to do was to just lay down in bed next to her." And said, "For 3 hours, she said, I had to fight through awkward moments of where I feel like I should say something right now, I should do something right now. But she said, for 3 hours, I didn't say anything. And I told her, what a great ministry you had that day." The bottom liner. Bottom liner is the person that you've been into the story long enough, they got enough information, let's be done with it. The interviewer. The interviewer comes to the conversation with a plan and with questions. And if you've been around an interviewer, it can be quite exhausting where they're like, okay, next question, next question. And they don't allow you to finish one question before they're launching into the next question. It can drain the energy. The hijacker. "We've been listening to you long enough. It's my turn." The debater. The debater is always trying to shoot holes in your logic. Or you share something you heard. "Where did you hear that?" They want like you to cite what you just came up with. And then the sentence completer. The sentence completer is the one who you're not even finished and they're finishing the sentences for you. And, you know, Amy admits she can be a sentence completer. And we were years ago getting ready in the bathroom and she was on the other side of the shower curtain and we're having a great conversation. I thought, oh, this is a good time to go make the coffee because I thought the conversation was over. And I go down to the kitchen, I make a pot of coffee, I'm pouring the coffee, I come walking back down, I set the coffee down, but as I'm walking back towards the bathroom, I realize, wow, there is still a conversation going on in the bathroom. So I come racing back in there and I set the coffee down, and if your husband's ever had this moment where he's like, he's just trying to process what's going on, before he speaks, he wants to know what happened. I'll tell you what happened. I left, and she didn't see me leave because she's on the other side of the curtain. While I was gone, she asked me a question. And I wasn't there, which was no big deal. She answered the question for me. Okay? She did not like my answer. She did not like my answer. And I'm like, what just sentence completer? A few more passages to share with you. Proverbs 15:30 says, "Bright eyes gladden the heart. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face." So I've been working for us on the point of reconnection at the end of the day, like when we see each other after the end of a long day, to just not be that one who walks in and throws stuff down and tends to stuff, gets the garbage and changes the light bulb and takes in the mail and starts flipping through the mail. The first thing I want to do to show her, I'm listening. Now, I walk in, and I give her bright eyes. So she's across the kitchen, and I walk in, and this is all you do, guys. You walk in, and you just go. You tilt the head back and forth a little bit. Then Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 6. His left arm is under my head. His right arm embraces me. So here's what I do. I walk in, I see her. And then I walk over to her. And I put my left hand right there behind her head. Are you paying attention, guys? This is big. You're going to do this tonight when you leave. And you bring her down to here. And what does it say? His right arm embraces me. Look how biblical this is. Let's do it again. Let's walk through it one more time. And you look her right in the eyes. And you say, "Coo, coo." Thank you, Focus. It's been great being with you this afternoon.
Was really good, wasn't it?
Ooh.
All right, I'm going to test this theory. I like to think of myself as a good listener. I do interview people, so let's just dial it up right now. I'm calling Gene right now. Let's see if we get this through here.
Hello, this is Gene.
Ooh. Ooh.
That's an owl.
What? Who is this? Are you a weirdo?
Did you hear what she
said? What?
Are you a weirdo?
You did the owl. That wasn't a dove. That wasn't a dove.
I have to repair my marriage tonight now. Thanks a lot, Ted Cunningham.
Well, we had so much fun with Ted at a recent Focus on the Family Chapel. And Jim, what did Gene have to say about that phone call when you got home?
It was kind of like, what were you doing? What was that all about? She didn't quite, I didn't do the animal sound the way Ted wanted me to, so I blew it.
I think it was context. I mean, it was coming out of left field for her, right?
I told her I was learning how to be a better listener, and at least she appreciated that part. But, you know, many of us will be seeing our extended family this week, or perhaps as we get closer to Christmas time. But let me encourage you to follow Ted's advice and just listen. Listen to understand, not to debate. Listen to let that person know that you care about them. You don't have to agree with them. Just hear them. It can make a big difference in your relationships.
Well, we've experienced that as my kids have become adults and one's married now. We get them all together, and there are some differences of opinions that can really come up and flare up, but we've just got to be able to give grace and hear them out. That really is important when you have so many different opinions.
Well, what a great way to get to know someone better, to give them time and space to share their heart. And of course, that applies in our marriages as well, as Ted beautifully illustrated today. And you know, our research tells us that Focus on the Family has helped over 700,000 couples build stronger marriages or get through a major marital crisis in this past year. And if you're a regular donor to this ministry, let me say thank you for helping us strengthen marriages around the world. Your gifts do make a difference. Here's a note we received from a woman I'll call Kelly. She said, 17 years ago, I almost divorced my husband. A Focus counselor gave me solid advice and sent a book about boundaries. And now my husband and I have celebrated 30 years of marriage, and my walk with God is stronger than ever. Thanks, Focus. But let me say thank you to you, those who support this ministry. You deserve that credit as well. And obviously, God deserves all the credit. And if you need help for an issue in your marriage, just give us a call and ask for a call back from one of our caring Christian counselors. They'll spend some time with you on the phone, suggest some next steps, and perhaps recommend you attend our Hope Restored 4-day intensive. Our counselors were there for Kelly 17 years ago, and they're here for you today. So just call us. And when you make a donation of any amount, I'd like to send you a CD of this great message from Ted Cunningham as our way of saying thank you. So get in touch with us today.
And you can do that by calling 800, the letter A in the word family, 800-232-6459, or donate online and request the CD at focusonthefamily.com/broadcast. When you're online, let me recommend that you check out our Focus on Marriage assessment, which is a free, easy way to identify the strengths in your relationship, and it offers some insights about areas of improvement as well. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back as we once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.